everyone. Welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You are joining us today on another wonderful December day today. What is it?
It's the second.
Okay.
A gloomy December day.
Yeah. So when this episode drops, it's probably going to be like December 10th or somewhere in there. But I'm your host, as always, Jamie Ma, and I'm being joined with my co-host, Mickey McLeod. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm well. Yeah. How are you?
It's good. It's nice to see your face. I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
It's been a while, yeah.
We've been busy doing things, and you've been hermiting, which is nice.
Been hermiting. I don't leave the castle very much, but I think all the, well, we didn't even mention, but we had the Vancouver Podcast Festival.
We did.
Which was crazy. Yeah. But my social interaction reservoir was full, so I had to hermit for the next 3 weeks-ish.
What do you do when you hermit?
Just walk around the apartment. I mean, the studio. Play with my cat, you know. Me and Pete, we get into some crazy stuff, you know. Yeah. Drink some red wine. Yeah. Drink some boxed red wine.
Boxed red wine? That's you and your cat too?
I'm joking, listener. I'm joking.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a fun life.
Yeah. You know, the internet is here, so you don't really need to leave your house, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Make sure you shower and then
have you watched
all the entertainment's online.
Have you watched The Irishman yet?
No. What's that? The Irishman?
Yes.
Is that a TV show?
No, it's a movie. It's Scorsese's new movie. It just came out.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the pulse and here's my finger. Far as possible away from the pulse and up my ass, usually.
You just said you're on the internet. You don't go on Netflix ever?
No, I don't have Netflix. Oh my God. No. Okay. I don't have Crave. I don't have Netflix. I don't have some company telling me what to watch.
Okay, so now I'm outing you. Okay. Anyways.
I do have torrent sharing though. So.
Well, there's a couple things we need to talk about. Since I last seen you, I did go check out the new Boufla up in Edgemont Village.
What's up, James?
Yeah, James and Josh were there. They invited us for one of their friends and family tastings. I had a great time down there. Took great care of us. Beautiful restaurant. Anybody out there looking for some delicious pizza, pasta, great atmosphere? If you're in North Van, do check them out up in Edgemont Village. Beautiful restaurant. Very, very, very cozy, which I really liked. And they have a great Garibaldi cocktail on there, which is the classic Campari cocktail with orange juice.
Oh, okay.
It blew me away. I don't know. Our guests here probably can elaborate on this one because I don't really know much about how they do. Like, they make fluffy orange juice and they have this machine that makes it. And it's fucking delicious.
Fluffy orange juice?
Yeah, it was a thing. Yeah. It was a thing. I like.
It hasn't gone bad, has it?
No, I think it's the way they shake it or where like it compresses and does something. I don't know.
Okay.
But it was really cool. We had a good time there. So I just want to give them a shout out. Also, I just want to give a shout out to Sean Layton, our last guest on our last episode. If anybody out there is still looking to listen to that episode, do check it out. Sean gave us a lot of the goods on Como's 1 year anniversary, how things have been going for them. Also, obviously them coming second in Canada's, the En Route magazine's best new restaurants in Canada. So we definitely are very excited for them. So that episode was great. I hope anybody out there is looking to listen to it, do check it out. Today, we're very excited to bring on another person, another...
Even with the bar theme.
Yeah, staying with the bar theme. Someone
cocktails.
Who also, yeah, we're drinking a cocktail right now too, one of his. We're very excited to drink that and we'll talk about that more. But the gentleman today is doing something really cool, very similar to his compatriot, Jeff Savage. He also works at Botanist. Mm-hmm. Great restaurant in the Fairmont Pacific Rim Hotel, if you're looking to find that out. His name is Max Curzon Price. He is... Where are you from again?
I'm English.
You're English?
South Coast, Brighton.
Brighton?
Brighton boy, yeah.
Where's Brighton?
Brighton, wow.
Directly south of London until you hit water. You're in Brighton.
I've never been there, but I've heard of it. So
it's great. We are with the second gayest city in the world per capita.
Gayest city in the world, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think 2016 was like...
Fun fact, man.
It is.
I love hearing shit
it's
like that.
It's literally fun because...
It has to be fun.
Like everyone loves a party all the time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It's great. It's like less than an hour from London, but there's no high rises.
Okay.
So it's like extremely bohemian and...
Oh, kind of like San Fran a little bit.
It's the San Fran of Europe. Pasta. Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
How long have you been in Vancouver now?
I just had my 3 year anniversary in October.
Oh, yeah. Anniversary, I like that.
Anniversary. Not to be mistaken with cannabis, but you know.
Which is also involved in BC. Yeah.
Very much so.
So, anyways, we're very excited to bring Max on today because he is doing some really cool things. He's the Bacardi Legacy champion. Are you the current one?
For British Columbia,
for British Columbia,
to compete in the Canadian Nationals in Puerto Rico in March. January.
January? Okay. And he was also part, we talked about this on our episode with Jeff Savage. He was also part of the Bulls Around the World team that won the global title back in June. Or was that
July? Yeah, that was the summer.
Yeah, the summer. Was... Yeah, so it was him, Grant Cini, and Jeff Savage.
Congrats. We now have the trifecta.
Yeah, we've had the
Grant Cini's been on.
Yeah, Grantini's been on.
Grant was the white whale. We got him on.
Grant was great. We actually, well, I mean, anybody who listened to that episode with Jeff, we Jeff gave a very detailed story of Grant and his traveling struggles.
He did.
Which was very entertaining.
Very entertaining.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, you should try traveling with him.
Oh, you can elaborate. You can give some more stories here. Yeah. So we can just spend the entire episode talking about Grant Cini. But as Mickey will always say, we love you, Grant.
Love you, Grant.
But
friend of the show.
You are doing some really cool work with Bacardi Legacy. You were doing. You started this new kind of initiative called
Hive of Apiarists.
Hive of Apiarists, yeah. But also it's based off your cocktail, Plight of the Bumblebee. Am I correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess why don't you elaborate? What's going on here? What are you working on?
So Legacy is a pretty cool cocktail competition. It's as many of the larger ones are, it's very open to interpretation and what you really want to do with it and how you want to sort of craft your legacy. As they say, you know, the tagline to it is, you know, what is your legacy? What is it that you choose to leave behind, or what is it that you're choosing to sort of perhaps best within your community? So there's a lot of opportunity for community engagement within it, which is something that I've been trying to push myself to think a little bit more about now in the bartending world, because we don't want to just feel like we're just showing up, making drinks and going home every day. I want to feel like you're giving something back a little bit. Bumblebee is obviously a very popular hot topic right now, and the dwindling number of honeybees out there. It's actually a project that I was considering working with and starting out for a while, and then when Legacy came around, I thought it was going to be a really great vehicle to sort of tie the two together and bring them to life and help get myself into Puerto Rico, preferably.
Oh, yeah.
For the next round, but also to give a little bit of leverage to the program that I wanted to start up, which focuses on the dwindling threat of the bumblebees and how we can start to look and focus on supporting that within the bar community. So, yeah, the cocktail is relatively simple in itself, Plight of the Bumblebee. When you put sort of a recipe out into the world, it's very difficult to relinquish all the control. You know that someone's always going to do a pinch of this and a dash of that. So the whole concept of the drink is that really wherever you make it in the world, there's the five ingredients, but the one ingredient I really want people to work with is the honey. So, you know, utilize your own local honey wherever you are in the world. Every single continent outside of Antarctica has honey. And that way, every time you pour that drink, symbiotically, you're sharing a taste of your neighborhood. You're supporting small local businesses, and you're also supporting the species as well as the spaces that we provide and you know, leverage in order to get the ingredients that we play with here. So it's always going to be familiar, but unique and different wherever you are in the world.
It's interesting when you bring up this idea, because when you first brought this to my attention and I was reading about the profile that you're working on, you talked about this just now, saying that this was something that was already kind of swimming in your head. Is the, I guess, the degradation or the loss of, or I don't know, I'm not using the proper word right now, but I guess the death of the bumblebee, is that something that was already present in you and you were like, I need to learn more about this and I'm curious about this, or I'm like, I'm saddened by this and this is something I want to, what can I do to be more, have some more initiative in this? Or is this, or did the cocktail competition kind of pull that into you and you were thinking of ideas? Because, I mean, I think we've heard about that where, like, you, all over the world over the last, like, 10 years, you hear stories of, like, 10,000 bumblebees died or this and that. And
yeah, there's a mass thinning out.
Yeah, obviously, it's a lot of external factors that are happening with that, but obviously, like, global warming is one of the main regions. But, like, was that something that was already kind of through you and you're, like, kind of, like, I'm already kind of into this idea and this cocktail competition kind of just worked with it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Obviously, with the presence of it, on a global level, you know, it is something that like keeps coming up and we keep hearing about, and it can be very easy to be very dismissive because you just keep hearing the same thing. You're like, yeah, small plastics. Yeah. Like, or
yeah.
Use microbeads in your shower gel. Like
out of mind, out of sight. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And, or, you know, and you just keep hearing the same thing. So you just think, you know, I can't care for everything. And I read one really great, article that came out of The Economist, which said that in 2019, the bumblebee was rated the single most important living organism on planet Earth. Surprise, surprise, it's not fucking humans. And
what a shocker.
Well, yeah,
okay, so have you done a lot of research on bumblebees?
And I have now,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So maybe you can enlighten me a little bit, but like the bumblebee, the main thing that they do is pollination, right? That's the main thing that we need them for.
They carry the male and female pollen to plants that make them be able to reproduce, right?
To reproduce, right? Yeah. So if we don't have the bumblebee, we're pretty much fucked. Is that how that works?
But yeah, so bees are accounted for 3/4 of wild pollination. So that's not necessarily to say the food that we eat, unless you happen to be walking past an apple tree in the woods. But 3/4 of wild pollination that it feeds insects, birds, everything up to huge bears that roam around here in BC. Like everything from tiny to huge enjoys the fruits of pollination. Subsequently, you know, think about like the way that plants like are pollinated, grow, move, and are sort of dispersed around through the process of pollination. If you remove that, the food chain crumbles. Well, at least 3/4 of it crumbles. Mm. That's huge, right?
And, yeah.
As somebody, like I'm saying, only been here for 3 years to be able to like see like untapped raw wilderness for the first time, really in my life, 3 years ago in British Columbia here, you start to see it and respect it in a very different light. It's not quite the same as the fields that we have in the UK, which, yes, it's green, but like it's farmed. It's, you know, this is a very real, very visceral, powerful wildlife that maybe we won't be seeing the effects of it quite as quickly as other places will. But it is definitely something that we should be considering at the same time.
Don't you think that's kind of a funny thing that, you know, if you're like God, you're like, yeah, you know, I'm going to put the fate of the species squarely on this little...
Mm-hmm. Little, the teeny tiny wings of like, this teeny tiny
God,
insect.
Such a God thing to do, though,
I know,
you think?
I know, it's kind of weird. Huh? But then you think about like the bee itself, it's just like, we are assholes to bees because they build their honeycombs. Don't they build that for the reserves to eat?
Yeah, so...
And then we're assholes and we steal it?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Isn't that kind of mean?
And then we say, just make some more, man. Isn't you're a bee.
But well, that, Jerry Seinfeld did a great documentary/movie called Bee Movie.
Bee Movie, yeah.
Yes.
Which is related. It's such a wild movie.
So many layers in that movie.
So many layers.
but okay, so you when you have a call, what do they call it? Apiaries?
Apiaries.
Apiaries. Yeah. Apiaries is basically where we like...
Cultivate it, yeah.
Cultivate them.
Yeah.
So we get them to make honey, and then we steal the honey.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they get pissed off?
They do. The brain's only the size of a sesame seed, though. So I don't think they just see like, oh, there's no honey, make more honey. Oh, there's no honey, we'll make more honey.
But don't they get hungry?
So they don't actually
eat
honey.
This is me just being a retard. I don't know much about
it. The honey, feeds the baby bees, essentially, to bring up the next round. Okay. But they themselves
eat. But in apiaries, do they leave honey for them to eat?
Yeah, because they're always eating it, but they're also always producing it. You know, if there's upwards of like 80,000 bees in one colony, you only remove like... one rack at a time.
Oh, okay.
Honey.
So you're not just taking it.
You're not like decimating everything. You're just like,
no, it's not like,
it's just like slow, continual harvest.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you visited a lot of apiaries throughout this?
I've spoken to a lot of apiarists or beekeepers.
Yeah.
Right now, they're all hibernating. They don't come out until like February.
Oh, so
there's like,
you hibernate. Single,
yeah, they do. Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
So it's just kind of strange, which is why you can't harvest right now because they're like desperately eating and,
so what's the number one thing that you've learned from this whole experience outside of the cocktail part of it, like from the bee world, like that kind of maybe blew your mind up and you're like, holy shit.
Well, I mean, like, so when I started looking at like small figures and doing maths and numbers and crunching, it's interesting when you can quantify it down to one cocktail. So in what each one of these drinks is 11 mil of wild local honey. Yeah. I figured out that in that 11 mil, every one cocktail is the life's work of 27 different bees. Which is so sad, but also pretty incredible. Mm. And the influence of up to 48,000 different flowers in one drink.
In one drink?
One drink. So one drink,
this cocktail
and only 11 mil of honey, that cocktail, is the life's work of 27 different bees.
So this cocktail that I'm holding in my...
30 seconds to pour it.
Yeah,
and
to drink
too. And, you know, just shy of 50,000 different flowers. So, when you start just thinking that, like, small things that we consume and, like, how much... work goes into that before we even touch any ingredients is pretty wild.
So when you talk to these apiarists, would that be the right word? Mm-hmm. Do they ever like kind of give you any like when they obviously work in the industry, they know the industry, that's their lifeblood. I'm always curious about like if they think of like, oh, these are certain things that we could do to maybe help maintain them. Is there anything that you've learned in that sense that's like, as human beings, like that we could do to be better suited or helping this
industry? Better.
Be better. There you go.
Yes.
It's definitely, I've learned tons from them. I just like, there's something you met. Beekeepers are kind of funny people. They're like, if you ever meet like a mycologist, like a mushroom person, you just kind of like wind them up and just watch them go. They'll just talk for hours about it, which is great because it's a great knowledge pool. But also like, I suppose they, when you get into your sort of industry, you become this very like one-track mind. And I'm amazed at the amount of people that are like, hi, I'm a bartender and I'm interested in doing these things. They're like, you can do what with honey? People are doing what with honey? And you're like, yeah. They're like, you're going to try and start a charity with honey and cocktails? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I never thought about that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, okay. No, we're both learning.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, it's such an old practice, right? And it's one of those ones like, this is the way we do it. I guess there's just not tons of people engaging with like from the food and drink industry with the production of ecological things. You know, there's a lot of work over like at UBC for like microgreens and herbs and veg, and obviously like a lot of restaurants at Barnett's in the Pack Rim. Like we know that the chefs work super close with like the butchers to make sure they're getting the best meat or the best fish. But when you can buy the honey in a 15-kilo drum, I don't think people care too much really about.
Have you guys ever heard about this? I've read about this somewhere where like a lot of like honey that you buy out there sometimes it can be fake. Like I've heard of stories
where people are
putting corn syrup and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, just to lengthen it.
Lengthen it.
Bulk it out, right?
Yeah, like and just like cheating people out of my honey.
She wouldn't shock me in the least.
No.
Yeah,
doesn't shock you?
No, not at all. That's the major corporations been doing that stuff. Ever.
Yeah,
Coca-Cola is the problem.
Well, olive oil.
They're just selling us poison, essentially, right?
Olive oil is another one. Like olive oil is a big one where you have to be careful. Like I've heard of stories of people just not putting real olive oil and stuff. The fact that,
I would completely unsurprised. There's no regulation. What's to stop a company from? It's just more profit, right?
Yeah, for sure. And so, I mean, that's
a little bit of cornstarch here, a little bit of softener there,
some palm oil,
totally.
Oh, good, yeah. But that's the whole idea with this, right? Is like use your local wild honey. Yeah. The smaller batch you can get it, the better. And like this drink changes dramatically.
So where are you getting yours from?
Ours is this one that we're drinking right now is Main Street Honey Shop.
Okay.
This guy's a G's, by the way. And they have like four, sometimes five like hyperlocal expressions. I bought like five different jars from Hastings Sunrise, Kitsilano, Queenie Park, North Van, and Stanley Park. Okay. And they're all like totally different colors, totally different hues, different aromas, totally different flavors. And you're like, this is like literally like my neighborhood, your neighborhood, Jamie's neighborhood.
Yeah. I have a question. So what constitutes those changes in flavor profile?
Like, local pollen? Just, like how
this species of bee and like this
so there's only one
environment?
It's only the honeybee that produces honey.
There's only one type of honeybee.
There's only one honeybee.
Okay.
That's the oneybee.
The oneybee, yeah. But there's over like 16,000 species of bees.
Yeah, for sure, right? But it's the only one that produces honey.
Why do you know that?
I don't know why.
It's just in there, man. It's just some knowledge.
Is that what you do at night? You just research weird topics? Weird facts?
Yeah, that's the internet. That's the internet.
It's man, he just goes to the internet.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious what you do in these hermiting days. What do you do?
Yeah. But that's a topic for another day, maybe, perhaps. We'll do a whole episode on what I do. But so it's based on just environment and
environment, local pollen that's like available to them. There's only so far that they'll ever really leave from their hive, especially in urban areas that are like quite dense like this. We could go into like how they find it, which is...
Well, the reason I ask is you would think all honey should taste like relatively the same.
Yeah, but I mean, also, like, if you think about what you feed a cow and how the beef ends up tasting differently, right? So if they're pulling from, let's say, in your neighborhood here, there's, like, a huge rosemary bush, maybe there's some lavender, maybe there's some cherry blossoms in the season. All of this, like, I think everyone's had, like, lavender honey before or, like, orange blossom honey and stuff like that. You can like... taste those differences there. So when it's wild, it's just like an amalgamation of all that. And the cool thing is you can't really track what it is. You're like, hey, this is tasty. Mm. And some people have started like tracking it now in vintages, much like you do with fine wine, but like vintage honey.
Vintage honey as well.
This 2006 is really showing lavender
tone. Well, honey doesn't, it's not something that like gets better with age. think so.
Well, they found some in Tutankhamun's tomb, and somebody ate it, and they said that it tastes delicious.
They had honey in his tomb?
In his tomb, yeah. Huge jars of it. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, well, you know, they just like buried them with things that they thought.
Isn't there something to do with like royal jelly there?
There's definitely something in there to do
with. I
know
that from a Futurama episode, by the way.
Futurama bringing us. Oh, I remember that episode. That was a good one.
He gets he goes into like some sort of weird psychedelic state.
Yeah.
Travels through time or whatever, just from eating this like royal jelly.
Am I wrong to say that I feel like that show is very underrated?
I don't think it's underrated at all.
What?
It's an amazing show. Futurama?
Well, yeah, because it's the same guys who did King of the Hill, right?
No, Simpsons.
Simpsons.
Yeah.
Not Groening.
That's what it was.
Strike one.
Yeah.
What? Tristan, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
Why? He would have been mad at me.
Tristan would be very upset that you made
King
that.
Of the Hill and Futurama.
Why?
Yeah. Those are like the Beavis and Butthead guys, right? Jude. Mike Judd.
Mike Judge.
Yeah.
Or
Judge?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. No, why Futurama is Matt Groening. Simpsons guys. Yeah, Matt Groening.
Why would he be mad at me for that?
Because he's a super cartoon nerd, and he would be mad that you misspoke there. But anyways.
No, I like that show. It's really good.
Of course, it's good.
But I don't hear people talking about it as much as like...
I grew up a huge Futurama fan. It was very prominent in my upbringing. So maybe it's just circumstances, Jamie.
It's like a second father.
Did they not
to
get... Saskatoon doesn't get the comedy or Cartoon Network, maybe.
Nah, I was a Seinfeld guy. Yeah. I watch a lot of Simpsons. I gave up on Simpsons around like 99, I think. That's when I said
that was like peak Simpsons years right there.
No, I thought Simpsons was like best years was like 92 to like 98, 99, somewhere there.
It was still good in 99, man.
Was it? I don't know. Whatever. I need to go back. It's been like 30 years now. Like, I think they started in 87, 88. And it's like, yeah, it's like 30 years now.
Oh, we're getting like way, way off topic. Can I ask you a question about royal jelly?
Your cocktail, Plight of the Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Is the basis for the Hives of Apiary. Is that what it
is?
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys have a whole website going on here, and then you have a program that you're doing where people can come in and learn and do classes. Am I correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I saw that. You have like a level 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
So
$1 from every cocktail that's being sold is going towards a program called a Hive of Apiarists. There's an application profile going on online. Hopefully the website will be finished construction by the time this airs, which is hiveofapiarists.com.
Okay.
Where you can go on there and you can basically apply to be a recipient of the program. There is currently funding for 3 different individuals across Canada at the moment. Hopefully we can expand that in the future to receive beginner, intermediate, advanced training for urban beekeeping. Basically, we provide them all. It's all like BC Certified Beekeepers Guild, and then we provide them as well with like the starter colony, the first hive, and all the kit that they need.
So can you do that in your backyard?
Yeah. I mean, there's like you could do it on the studio patio here.
Hummingbird like colony happening, like birds all around all the time.
Give them some friends, like, man. I'm looking at the little guys that are like cruising around out there. And
you actually could probably do that for sure, because your balcony is huge and you could definitely put something out there.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that was like, I know that I just learned like a couple years ago that you can actually have a maximum of 3 chickens in your backyard.
At any given time.
You're zoned for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have a friend that has 12. I should let him know.
Uh-oh. What's that friend's name?
When did you find this out?
My random travels, Jamie, throughout life.
The question there is, why do you not have 3 chickens roaming around outside?
I mean, I could, but like, I don't know. Do they do well like off the ground floor? Like, would it be weird for them? Some vertigo situations.
Chickens. Like, that would be the coolest thing in the world. You go outside, you got a little chicken coop out there.
Yeah, I get it for pets, but I don't eat. I'm a vegan, so I don't eat animal products.
I think this is why I like you.
That probably doesn't help.
I think this is why I like you. You're starting to become the Dosa Key guy. You're the most interesting guy in the world.
I'm not that interesting. Yeah. It's all a facade. No.
Well, you got all these interesting facts. It's really cool. Well,
okay, so if you can get these little starter kits, that's just like trying to combat the problem, essentially, right? Because the more bees, the more honeybees we have making honey, the more
there are, the better. Yeah, and the long and the short of this is getting people to engage with each other and talk more about it. So essentially, the more cocktails that we sell, the more people we can train, the more subsidy there is for that.
Mm-hmm.
It only costs something like $622 for like start to finish for the full training. Up to advanced plus the starts colony. That's not that much money.
Who's doing the instructions and all stuff?
It's going to be through like there's a BC beekeeping guild.
Okay,
so they'll be doing all the training there.
So you've basically created a partnership with them.
Yeah,
So they kind of bring people in. They do all the training. You come in, come to the
hybrid. I mean,
are you involved in a lot of this or no?
Yeah, I'm the one that's like
kind of
spearheaded this for sure.
You're kind of like the intermediary.
Yeah, sure. I'm just going to be connecting people with these individuals, and then I just ask that the people that do engage with the program provide us a number of sort of different pieces of feedback and content so that we can engage with the next generation. I would also like the three first people to be very engaged with the next generation that comes on board next year. And share their knowledge with them and be like, hey, you're having this problem with this pest. Actually, I had that same problem. So we're like working much more together to become much more of a sort of a hive mind of apiarists, hence the name Hive of Apiarists. Because I think people tend to hoard information a lot more than they should. And, you know, when we start to share our knowledge and our wealth, then we all sort of symbiotically rise up together in terms of our spaces and the species that we utilize. Yeah.
That's actually like one of my favorite bits that Bill Burr ever did in a comedy skit. Was he's like the world would be so much better if we just shared information amongst societies.
Mm-hmm.
And he like did this whole bit on the idea of like, he's like, you know, black people always talk about the idea that they get ashy with their skin. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that they're dry. And he's just like, he's basically telling this joke about how like, he's like, his friend goes up to him. And he's like, you're ashy too. He's like, I don't get ashy. He's like, I'm white. But he's like, if we just shared information between each other,
yeah, we'd
like figure out things. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yeah, it's, I'm not really explaining this properly, but I like what you're going there.
Yeah.
It's like, don't hoard the information, share it and kind of.
Well, it's so frustrating to learn a new craft as well. And like to do it alone, really,
yeah.
Right? Like if you were like really putting your time and effort into, I don't know, man, like if you just got Pete, your cat, right? And mm-hmm. as a kitten.
Sure,
you had,
Pete.
Yeah, right? But you had to figure out how to like house train a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like how easy is it to now just go to the internet or like speak to a friend?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll say you have a dog and have like a dog trainer.
Come yeah.
In. It's so much easier when you can do well, that, have that information.
That's crazy. So I'm gonna bring up a little bit of a sad story. Just like I had another cat that he passed away, unfortunately, about 3 years ago. It's Pete's brother.
Right.
His name was Luke. RIP Luke. So when you have young kittens,
yeah.
One thing that's really hard for them to digest is hard food, right? And I learned this the hard way because I was feeding my cats hard food instead of wet food throughout their entire young adult life. So apparently between the ages of 1 and 4, just male-specific kittens and cats, young cats, are very prone to have blockages in their urinary tract,
wow.
Right? It's called stones, right? Yeah. And it can be really seriously devastating and can actually cause kidney failure. So I brought in my two cats to a vet, which I will not name, which I don't go to anymore because this was literally a month before my one cat died.
Yeah.
And total checkup, they're like, your cat's a little heavy and needs to lose some weight. But he had developed a blockage, right?
Right.
And I've had pets my entire life, right? But I had no knowledge of the fact that this was a thing in young kittens.
Yeah.
I was in my vet's office, nothing on the walls, none of these little posters saying like, hey, if you have a young male cat, make sure they have really good urinary tract health. So that made me think of that because it's like if veterinarians and people and my mom and my girlfriend at the time were like, what? That's a thing? I don't know. Have you ever heard that?
No, kittens? No, man.
See, perfect example. Two people, two grown men who have never heard this thing. And I'm not saying it's a conspiracy theory, but if I just found anything online about maybe make sure your cats are getting a more of a mixture of wet and dry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have less cat deaths because it's a big thing. You can develop stones, like I said, and then it just the kidneys shut down. So I was like super pissed at my pet because I was like, why the fuck wouldn't you ask me what they're eating? Just say he's like heavy, but he had all this.
Nah, your cat's fat.
Yeah, your cat's fat.
That's fat. It's got to lose weight.
So in the context of sharing information, it benefits everyone if everyone's so transparent.
Yeah.
With just sharing little things like that. So.
You know, sure. Do you know that we can go buy some eggs?
Eggs? Why would we want eggs?
We can egg his car.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just going to say, because I don't give a fuck anyways, it's Cypress Street Animal Hospital. Don't ever fucking go there. They're a bunch of hacks. I go to Carousel. They're the fucking best at Carousel.
If you
shout out. Sue me. Fight me. Whatever.
So is that a yes?
For eggs? Well, I don't think you can.
He said he's vegan, but also if you had those three chickens in the garden, man, you would already
chicken
have
abortions
plenty
at
of eggs.
The window.
It's got real weird, real
anyways,
quick.
Sorry,
got real dark.
Anyways, that just made me think of that because everyone in my friend circle and my family circle was like, I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
But if you ask any vet, they're like, yeah, it's a total thing. So it's interesting. And it's really cool that that's a primary mission statement from this program that you're doing, right?
Yeah, just share information, man. Like,
it's important stuff.
You're learning a new thing, especially if you're like accountable for a hive, you know, a collective single colony or unit right there, mm-hmm. right? You know, that's like 80,000 different lives. I mean, yes, they're bugs, but you know, they're doing very real things and they're also giving you a very real product at the
80,000?
End. 80,000, up to 80,000 in a colony. A small one will be 10,000. So let's say you're just starting off, you want to be a part of this program. Hey, mate, maybe Track and Food wants a beehive.
Oh, the Track and Food beehive,
yeah. Yeah, see? That would be great. That would be fun.
That sounds pretty good. Actually.
I know you're not supposed to eat it as a vegan, but also at the same time.
Why can't you eat honey?
I'm not that kind of vegan because the insect technically isn't perishing.
It's not.
Specifically
you're not
directly to feed you.
Yeah,
I'm
and
okay
you actually
you eat honey, right?
Yeah.
Honey's great.
It's good. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have drank that otherwise. Yeah.
There's honey in this cocktail.
God damn it!
Oh, a quick aside. What is the spirit in here?
Bacardi Ocho, baby. Shout out to them. Yeah, wow. 2 ounces of Bacardi Ocho.
That's why I feel so good right now.
What's Bacardi Ocho?
Huh?
What's Bacardi Ocho for anyone?
Bacardi is we all know about Bacardi. It's a delicious Puerto Rican rum. But this is the 8 year. It goes minimum 8 years in a barrel. It's heckin' delicious, and it shows really well with the honey and the grapefruit. I think there's a little nip of martini bitter in there. If you can't get your hands on martini bitter, you can use a little bit of Campari and a splash of lemon juice as well.
We'll make sure to post the recipe for this on the episode notes. So anybody who listens to this episode and wants to make this cocktail at home, we will make sure that you give you all the tools to do that.
Support your bees.
Support your bees. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna lie, this cocktail is very delicious.
Fantastic.
I just drank my full glass full and I'm going to have some more.
See, I wouldn't have, you know, I am a bartender, but I'm not a mixologist by any way, shape, or form, any stretch of the imagination. But I would never think to put grapefruit and honey together. And I don't know why. I just feel like grapefruit's too sharp and acidic and honey is just too, like, I would think of like lemon and honey, but I wouldn't think grapefruit.
Well, that's like the build of the drink is like 22 mil. So like three quarters of a part of grapefruit juice. And 7 mL, 1/4 of a part of lemon.
Yeah.
So like grapefruit's got that like bright, floral, fragrant kind of tones. And the lemon juice is just like that like full rounded citrus and acidity that helps lift it all out, right? And the honey there as well, depending on what honey you're using, is like bright and floral, the Kitsilano one or the Queenie one, which is like rich, dark tobacco. So that's pulling out different notes from the rum.
Mm.
I was speaking with Jeff about it last night and like I don't know why, but this like cocktail brings out a lot of the esters of the rum, right? Like some of the cooler, richer, funkier tones.
Interesting.
Which wasn't completely the way I planned it, but you know, serendipity is a wonderful thing. And mm-hmm. sometimes you taste a drink, you're like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's.
And speaking of which, we're gonna just refresh our our cups here. I do have to apologize though. I did not have the proper shaking.
I'm not mad at this.
But
it feels like camping
it's
right
creating
here.
A different,
you got like a
little experience.
Squeezy bag in a tin.
Yeah. I didn't think the bag would stand up in the fridge, so I just put it in a tin.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Thank you, Jamie.
But, great guy.
I mean, it's interesting how I've always thought about this too, how types of citrus are so different. Like just lemon and lime, for instance.
For sure, man.
Just interesting.
But that's like an old tiki trick, right? To like blend your citruses. Like,
yeah.
So to have like lemon and lime in equal parts or like grapefruit and lemon in this example that like you're like, oh, I'm just kind of tired of using lemon juice always and lime juice always.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, at Barnes, we make a grapefruit oleosaccharum and we have maybe, I don't know, 50 peeled grapefruits at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And you're like, crap, we don't have a drink with grapefruit in it. Like, yeah. I guess everyone in the kitchen's drinking grapefruit juice today.
Yeah.
So like, but you don't want to waste it, right? So it's about having that like forward thinking approach that you're like, if I want to use grapefruit peels on a garnish in a cocktail, or in an oleosaccharum, like you are accountable to use the rest of that fruit.
Zero waste, yeah.
Oh, it's just so stupid, right? Like I worked in a bar in the past where the beginning of our shift would start with cutting and juicing maybe 5 cases of limes. And then over the course of the night, we'd use another 2 cases of limes in peels. But the manager wants the peels to be fresh. So we bought 7 cases of limes instead of 5 cases of limes, mm-hmm. and threw away all the fruit because he wanted fresh juice tomorrow, and like threw away all the husks and peels because he wanted fresh juice before service. And like, yeah. there are just better ways of doing that. Like, that's so inefficient in cost and so wasteful.
Totally.
So,
where was this?
Back home.
Yeah.
Back home. The bar doesn't exist anymore.
Well, even in the hotel world where
what if that says something, right?
I just had that exact scenario too when I was in the Grand Manger getting limes and they were all sort of kind of browny. I was like, and I take the ones that are like, you know, they're still good, they're just a little bit brown. And I cut them up. My manager's like, hey, can you get some limes in our brown? I'm like, well, these ones are perfectly fine. They're going to provide the juice.
Yeah.
And we just got in this big discussion with the Grand Manger dude. I'm like, well, at some point, the customer's perception has to change on what is considered to be like not pretty fruit. And like, it's still performing the same function. You're getting citrus in it. If anything,
okay, it's ugly
flavorful.
On the outside, but the juice on the inside is still good.
I know, but
man.
It's so shitty that places, and it goes back to also food repurposing and all that kind of stuff. Is that like, if aesthetically it's not there, like visually it's not appealing, then it's like, well, we'll just fucking throw it away. And that's like a thing that's still super rampant in the
restaurant
industry.
Oh, it's everywhere, you don't...
Yeah, but I don't think that's rampant with the restaurant industry. I think that's just rampant with human beings because we have this affliction for beauty, right? So we're drawn to that. We're drawn to things that look pretty and anything that looks brown, stuff like that. But you're very correct to say that, like, you know, you can definitely use a lime that's got a brown edge on it a little bit, you can definitely use that for juicing.
Totally.
You know, for sure. And then, you know, maybe find the nicer ones for your peels or whatever. But like, yeah.
Yeah. And but if it's a situation where you just don't have any like really green limes, then fucking
figure it
the
out.
The ones that are halfway
you find
gone
a solution,
will be totally fine. So
then you just do a different garnish on your drink that day.
So who won the argument?
Yeah. I did. I cut them up and I fucking served them. And they're now being served right now. Well, maybe not today, but yesterday. Perfect. And if people can't get over the fact that my lime is not fucking super green and pretty, then fuck you. Like, this goes to the whole, what you're doing with this program. It's like, we need to learn how to be more mindful of like consumption and like waste.
Yeah.
And if we don't, well, whatever, the earth's not going to die, but we're going to get fucking obliterated.
Well, that's it. Right. I mean, like, I think there's something to be said there that if we were all slightly more mindful of how much work goes into the harvesting of like, One drink's 27 bees life work. You're like, God, I feel a little bit guilty for drinking it. But also, maybe you appreciate, hopefully you just appreciate it like one little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if you're like tasting the influence of like 48,000 different flowers, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. You're like, how much distance was travel per drink? Each single one cocktail is the distance from here to Edmonton that a bee has to fly. Or 27 bees have to fly.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, for one drink. That's like in their lifetime, how far they'll fly.
What is the life? What is the lifespan of a bee, by the way?
6 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
What? Excuse, what?
6 days. They only live for 6 days.
That's 6 days.
And the queen lays something. I don't know. I don't want to.
What? You're telling me that a bee doesn't even live a week?
No, man. No, it dies super quick. But it's just like colonies, right? The males stay home and all they do is mate with the queen. They live for less because when they mate, they die. So the queen just goes around just like...
So there's just new baby bees all the time?
Constantly, nonstop. Right now, they're like in the winter, they're in a cluster and all they're doing is like being born, eating honey and dying. They don't even leave the hive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just to keep the colony going, right? So that's like the saddest thing in the world is that there's like tens and tens of thousands of bees that just die over the winter and they're just like born and die.
Well, how do they die? Do they just... What, like, just...
I don't know what happens to them. Like... It's probably, so fascinating. I'm learning more about this.
They can't pollinate and they can't pollinate.
So they can't do anything.
They just have no.
You're telling me when I'm in the, like, I've been anywhere and I see a bee. You're telling me that bee is going to be dead in 5 days?
Apparently. Well, yeah. Everything I'm finding online is.
I actually thought that was a little long because I think the lifespan of a fruit fly is like 24 hours, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Again, why do you know?
You need to get on the internet.
Actually, I know that too.
You need to get on the internet more, bro.
How do you know that?
I think I know that just from working in bars. I'm just like, oh, see you tomorrow, fruit fly. And somebody's just like, no, it'll be dead. That'll be his kid that you see tomorrow. I'm like, God damn it.
Generations.
At least I know you'll be dead tomorrow.
Imagine having a life of only 6 days.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you would try and do good things with that time.
Yeah. Like, you'd want to get laid. You'd want to party a little bit.
For sure.
You'd want to get laid. You want to get party a little bit.
That's the first thing you said. Hey, you want to get laid?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Just, you know, there's other, there's, you know, having a family.
When I was six days old.
We want building kids? A legacy.
Nah, fuck that. You're already having a legacy. You already got the full beat colony. There's your legacy right there.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
You gotta find the hot bee. Like, I guess it's no. Are you having sex with your mom?
You're not having sex with your mom.
Well, first of all, when bees do it, it's not called sex. It's just called reproduction. It's a whole different context there.
Really? No passion.
They might enjoy it.
Famously unromantic animals.
You're getting this cocktail throughout the city and throughout. I looked on the thing. You're trying to get it throughout the country.
Yeah.
Is that already established at this point right now?
Good question, actually. So,
like, can I get this cocktail at other places in the city right now?
You sure can. Yeah. Diamond has it on as of yesterday.
Mm.
Lavatoire's featuring it from January 1st. Poorhouse did a thing. Shout out to you guys over there. Thank you very much for that. There's a bunch of bars in Vancouver. There's some people over in Saskatoon. We've got one in Alberta.
Ooh,
in
Quebec. Saskatoon?
Ooh. Yeah, Ian Miller.
Yeah, I know Ian.
He's well. He's setting up something at the moment and
amazing.
Yeah, if he
if
you are going to do that, thanks, man. I appreciate that. The interesting thing that I started to look at was like trying to think on the bigger scale. So I wanted to get this cocktail poured in every continent that has bees, which is every continent except Antarctica.
Yeah,
which is great because I don't know any bartenders in Antarctica.
I don't think there's bars in Antarctica. I think everyone just has.
There's got to be at least one, man.
There's got to be
there's
one.
There's got to be one. There's got to be one. And they're like, "Damn it, I've got all these grapefruits, but no honey."
Yeah.
Like, you're fucking stuck down there. You're drinking. It's too cold to not do anything.
You're
else.
Drinking every minute of every day to keep warm.
Yeah. Just anything, right?
Exercising.
But this cocktail is actually now on every continent.
It is.
It is. It's available in.
Is that your work or is that Bacardi doing that?
That's me.
That's you.
Me. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Because you sort of realize you start leveraging like the connections that you make through bartending. And it's been really cool because I've ended up like speaking to people that I haven't spoken to in literally years and being like, "Hey, what's up, man? I see you've had a kid. Also, are you still bartending? Like, would you mind featuring?" I sent them the little presentation that I prepared that you have.
Yeah.
Kind of get an idea of it. And it's now in Panama, Japan, Russia, South Africa, France, Spain, Portugal, UK, States, Chile.
And the reception's been very welcoming and very...
Well, I mean, that's been one of the most interesting things I found as well was that when people see that it becomes like global and it becomes about countries... Everyone just like jumps in. They really want to like not just represent the drink or the brand. They want to represent their country.
Yeah.
They want to see their country on that list as well. So, I mean, I put something up the other day about listing all the countries. And I had two friends, one from New Zealand and the other one from Chile, being like, "What about us?"
Like, yeah. Really?
For sure. I was like, so people started coming to me to be like, "Can we put this on?" I was like, that's amazing, right? Like, that's super cool that, again, that sort of like hive mind of like, people that you meet throughout your life, the connections that you make in 3, 4, 5 years later for some of these people, just like, it's just such a great reminder that people are like, "Oh, I'm still here. I'm still doing my thing. I know we didn't speak, but like, I'll help. What can I do?" Like, we've had people who, in terms of donations for, we're talking like a dollar off the top. It's kind of, it's been kind of difficult to gauge the volume of what these people are selling. So I had one bar of people in the States, somebody that I did at Bombay Sapphire, most imaginative bartender last year. And they're like, "Well, instead of trying to quantify, we're just going to donate our tips for the entire night that we make tonight on like a, they had an event that they were doing and they're like, "Well, we'll just donate our tips to it instead of trying to quantify how like a dollar for every single one." I was like, "That's extremely generous."
Mm.
So.
And the money, where's all the money going to?
So the Hive of Apiarists.
The Hive of Apiarists. Yeah.
So all that money is just going to basically like funding people to become urban beekeepers.
Is Bacardi contributing anything as well?
I hope they will.
Outside of like brand recognition and stuff like that.
We'll figure that one out. I mean, I can't say exactly like how much.
I'm not saying cash wise. Yeah. I'm not saying like that. I'm just saying, are they on board with this whole initiative? And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. Kevin Brownlee, who's the BC Bacardi family rep, has been like absolutely stellar, dynamite, and it's like full of support every single time that we're talking about a different program or a different sort of event to host with this. He's jumping right in with it.
And what a good man he is. I love Kevin Brown.
Such a G man. Yeah. Dude, that guy's a
used to be the head bartender for Annalena. Anybody who doesn't know him or if you've been to Annalena before, fantastic. He took that Bacardi job about a year ago, I think.
Yeah, about a year and a half or something like that.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's so charming, super nice.
I went to London with him last year for MIB and like had a blast out there. I'm going to Mexico with him next week.
I wonder what it'd be like to travel with that man.
Cazadores.
Is he a better traveler than Grant?
He sure is. He's organized as hell. Never once lost his passport on a plane.
Important. Well, I think so in our conversation, this is something that I've noticed in our conversation with Jeff as well, that there seems to be a real palpable push with major liquor companies to highlight sort of reduce reuse and waste reduction and also community-based efforts. Not community-based efforts, but initiative to really be more community-minded when it comes to everything to do with bartending. And I think that's really interesting because I haven't really... You know, I've been a bartender for my whole life, essentially. I'm manager, worked in the kitchen as well. But I've never noticed that on a huge, massive global corporate level. As much as I've seen in the last 2 years with programs like this and the Kettle One initiative that Jeff's involved with. Yeah. So I know, it seems kind of like low-hanging fruit on some level that all these companies aren't really, and like you can directly relate this to the plant-based meat movement as well, right? Like you can get a plant-based Whopper now, Impossible Whopper. Like Burger King is on board, which I'm kind of conflicted about. But you know,
why would you be conflicted?
There's nothing about it. I just mean, so yes,
you want to support the company.
Okay, but here's my thing. So you're choosing vegans. Fake meat over meat, which is great. But you're still supporting a company that's directly involved with insane factory farming practices. And that's where I'm kind of. But
baby steps.
Baby steps, exactly what I was saying. And this seems like baby steps in our field, in our industry about that as well. So I'm just really hoping that other companies and other industries can sort of follow suit in the coming years.
Well, I mean, I think to piggyback on what you're saying here, I think it's really cool because, I mean, if we look at the industry as a whole, I mean, this has been happening with chefs for years. Chefs have been, over the last 20 years, really trying to tap into their local communities,
like
the local farms,
sourced,
the local farmers markets, the local chef, like the local... butcher shops and all of whatever they're using.
Yeah.
It's definitely a growing movement where like, it's like, you know, be aware and conscious of your environment and your local community and try to support that. And I think it's great to see bartenders like yourself and Jeff and other bartenders we know who are really trying to tap into a very similar niche and market and also understanding that like what we do is also providing a service. We're trying to provide things with the hospitality industry with clientele, but we're also trying to make sure that we have a strong awareness of what we are consuming and providing for you. And also, like you're saying, having a little more sustainable and also understanding that like you taking the small initiative, even though it is built into a cocktail competition that you're competing in, which we believe that you will win.
You're getting that track and food bump.
You're getting that bump, buddy. But it's also, even if you have that initiative, which is also like a little bit of a, like a, you know, something for you to reach for, at least it's also a nice thing for you to kind of like, gives you a reason to build on something. And I think this is a great idea because even once this competition's done, regardless if you win or not, this is a great thing that you've built that can last.
It's still something that I'll continue to do.
Absolutely.
Win or lose, right? Because like, I mean, I think that's what comps are good at doing is getting you engaged with certain aspects. And especially when it comes down to community engagement, community development, it gets you in a different mindset perhaps of thinking outside of like I was saying earlier, like just showing up, making drinks, doing your job, packing the bar down and going home. Yeah. Which can be, for people of the industry, like, can be extremely monotonous, right? Like, it's the same grind every single day. So, to be able to have opportunities and like I say, just use it as this is something that I wanted to do anyway, but to be able to give yourself a deadline or to be given a deadline definitely means you kind of put your foot up your ass a little bit and just make shit happen, right? So, Legacy's been a great vehicle for that as well.
And also for these companies to fund and use their giant influence to highlight shit like this.
For sure.
I think, commendable in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to like show up to a comp and be like, ah, I'm just going to like make drinks and talk about this fun story that happened when I was a kid. But little by little, I think we all within our industry, touching food and drink so much, whether it's flipping patties at Burger King, like you're saying, and at least now you're making the Impossible Whopper or whatever, like down to like crafting these really cool cocktails. Like we have an ability to create very like emotional engagements with people. Like I think Jeff touched on it actually. Something where he's famous for saying this about working with your hands and your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I hear from him every now and again. And that's a very good statement. And you know, like be able to create like a physical, tangible, visceral thing that you actually get to enjoy, that appeals to the senses, the storytelling, the sound that comes with it, the smells, the tastes, the cold glass, like the nice little buzz that you get that comes with it. But like the emotional connection is the bit that like connects those five senses and creates maybe a little spark of inspiration in somebody, or a little consideration for the next time that maybe they reach to either, whether it be like buy honey, or whether you would inspire someone to maybe get an Impossible Whopper next time, or to not go to Burger King instead. You know, like it's about just, I think, leveraging all these opportunities that we have on a daily basis within the bar to create just a little bit of a better space. Just a tiny, like if for one iota, like yeah. The small, tiny things that we can do as a community to just start to share our knowledge with each other a little bit more.
How long have you been bartending?
This is 9 going on 10 years. Yeah, I started it. The first drink I ever made was 16 behind a bar in Portugal. It was
16.
It's legal to drink in Portugal when you're 16.
God. You were 16 making a cocktail in a bar.
I made a cocktail.
Okay.
But I was not.
And I didn't really start drinking until
I was not bartending. Yeah. Can you imagine? You imagine walking to a bar and there's a 16-year-old bartender there. Yeah. Probably bartending since I was 18.
When did you really start to fall in love with it?
When I was 18.
18?
Yeah, straight away, man.
Oh.
I had the right mentor, right place, right time. And
you?
Interesting.
When did you start liking hospitality?
You know my story, man.
No, I know, but
I'm like
there's
a reluctant.
There's a difference between like being in it and then also realizing like I really like this, not like doing it.
It was for me necessity for work life balance, essentially. Okay. I don't even think now I'm still in love with the field, but
really?
I have other passions that I do. Music is a big passion for me. Writing music. But as we've been doing this podcast, I've really started to sort of like refine my love for hospitality. So that's really been really cool. But I still am sort of the reluctant bartender.
That's weird because like I am
just doing my job, man.
That's so douchey. Yeah.
I just like people. That's why I like it.
You do like
I think
people,
a lot.
Yeah.
I think a lot.
I don't like much. Many
yeah,
people,
like I'm.
Actually.
I think we've all noticed this. I'm a big time social butterfly. I get FOMO when I'm at home anytime. And but I like being around people. I like being talking to people. I like meeting new people. And I think it's one of the great things about working in this industry. And you just meet so many unique people all the time, and you talk to them, and it's engaging. And you're like part of the party, which I think is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what people.
But you also have influence too, right?
For sure.
As a bartender. Well,
that's what we were just touching on.
I don't want to use those like words like influencer or tastemaker.
No.
But you do have a certain power and influence over people in your day-to-day routines as your job.
Yeah.
So you can recommend stuff and highlight stuff and for you specifically Jamie Wines and in your area of expertise. And so that's
but
a
even,
huge power.
But think about like what, I mean, that is 100% true what you're saying there. But also think about like what we get to do for a living is also like, 90% of people that do anything in this world, what they look to do for fun is, hi, I'm going to go for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
Or, hi, I'm going to go to a bar tonight. Or, hi, I'm going to go to a show tonight. But they come to us because we're the people doing those things for them. We're the ones working in those bars and restaurants and stuff like this. So it's like we're always kind of part of their fun, which I always think is really interesting because it's like, you know, you love to DJ. And people come to you for that. People come to the things that we get to do. And I just think that's one of the great things about what we get to do. And people always generally mostly come to us when they want to have fun and be excited. You know, it's not like when someone goes to, you know, get their car cleaner or anything. That's not an exciting job, like, you know. But like, what we get to do is pretty fun.
I disagree there. Yeah, getting a fresh car clean, man. Woo.
Sometimes just deep clean on your own car, and you're like, oh, I'm so happy now.
All the cracks, yeah. getting everywhere.
But yeah, you are right. I mean, yeah. I think, but that's where this job can become challenging, and that's the times where you can very easily fall out of love with bartending because you forget how to enjoy yourself when you go to a bar. Like, how often do you go to a bar and watch them, and you're like, he didn't wash that tin properly. That fork's not clean.
Yeah, this glass is wet.
Do you know? You know what I mean? Like,
you do that.
I do that more with hotel rooms. One of the best jobs I ever had. I was 17 years old. I worked as a housekeeper. My mom manages a boutique hotel in Brighton, and I'd just come back from Portugal. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and she's like, "Well, I'll just get you a gig as in housekeeping." I swear to God, if I ever have kids, I will match their wage to make sure they do a year of housekeeping. Dude, that is the shittiest fucking job on this planet. Housekeeping in a high-end hotel, those people need more respect. Tip your housekeepers. Tip your housekeepers.
Why?
Because...
obviously, well, I know why. I just want to hear you say why.
So, I mean,
why.
You know, yeah. Like,
do you it's, know
it, like, seeing people's...
the dirty condoms. Gross.
For one. Okay. For one. I mean, just on a daily basis, like, your job is to go up and clean people's daily shit. They're like, I don't need that. And they just, like, chuck their things on the floor.
Yeah.
You have to, like... pick up and fold people's clothes. You're encouraged to pick up and fold people's like dirty underwear and just put it on the side, which also like I find really uncomfortable. If I ever come back to a hotel room, I'm like, oh no, oh, what did you find?
What's the worst thing you've seen?
I think I should say, what's the worst thing you felt?
Ew.
I know. I tell you, yeah. A short story we had was. I remember going into room 101 one day, opening the door and being like, somebody got murdered.
Oh my God.
Somebody's dead. Somebody's dead.
I'm about, stench of death.
It was blood. So much blood. Like unfathomable amounts. Just everywhere. The bed was soaked. It was dried. They'd checked out. So evidently, if somebody died, they'd resurrected to check out politely and eat breakfast. And what had happened is the couple had just got like blindly drunk. And then in the night, the guy had got up to get a glass of water, smashed a glass on the floor of the bathroom. He actually turns out he cut a tendon in his foot and then just was so drunk. He just went back to bed, but he like, you know, walked around the room and was just like,
he didn't die.
He was fine. No, he was fine. Well,
how would you be fine?
But like, also, how drunk do you have to be to go back to bed? Like, oh fuck, that hurt! Like, you look at your foot and you're like, oh, I'll see to that morning. You're just like,
something. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But he lacerated the bottom of his foot somewhere, and it just.
Well, he got back to bed, so essentially that's your cut cloth. Sheets.
Yeah, there you go,
and
right
you're
there.
You're all set. Yeah.
But like, yeah, we had to redo the mattress. But that much blood, man! I was 17 years old. I was like, Mom,
The Shining.
Who works there? I had to call my dear mother to come in and. Help. It's a very nice hotel. She's still there now. But that room has since had new carpets, new mattresses, new beds, new everything. Yeah, housekeeping. Crappy job.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I guess you could say the same. Well, not exactly the same, but dishwashing is one of the things that they need more respect. And it's a really tough job. So,
for sure. Yeah. Way less blood, way less condoms.
Yeah. Very true.
But, you know, we deal with it. We work through it.
I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes I think about doing mischievous things to the housekeeping person, but I think I'm not going to do that anymore.
No.
So
why would you do that to them anyway? What do they do to you? All they do, like somebody throws up on a table or something in lobby lunch. Doesn't really happen. But we've
all worked
in a bar with
somebody. From his hair, but he's kind of a rock star, so he wants to do that whole rock star hotel room thing. Yeah. Don't do it.
TV out the window.
My buddy, one of his favorite things to do whenever he leave, like he used to do this, he told me this. But when he was renting when he was younger. Whenever he left a new apartment, he would take raw hamburger and put it in the vents of the house and just like put it up in the... like
friend's
in the,
a fucking dick.
What a fucking... But that's the, so raw hamburger fucking
so ridiculous. So the heat would like kind of slowly cook it and it would just get all gross. And,
but I'm guessing your friend was being evicted from every place. No. Your friend's a fucking
and then
asshole.
And then he would top tank toilets. So.
Nah, man. Not the upper decker.
So this is what they do in Saskatchewan, just so you know. I know you're new to the country, but... don't go to Saskatchewan.
Tell your friend that fish is way more efficient than hamburgers in vents.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So your friend's dumb, too. You should use fish.
Use a fish, man. You know how long it takes for a Burger King burger to go off? Fish? 12 hours.
If you, yeah. if,
the
if,
slow
if
permeation.
The person in question is actually listening to this, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you an asshole. That was really dumb.
Okay, better question. Have either of you ever top tanked before?
No.
No, and I'm proud to say I don't even know what a top tank is. Are you talking about an upper decker?
I think I know what you mean. We're talking about an upper decker, yeah. No, okay. man.
Well, I thought it was called top tank.
No,
I think both terms are appropriate, but...
you said top tank. I knew exactly what you were talking about.
Do you know anyone who's ever done it?
Do you want to tell us what it is, or do you want me to say it?
No, do you know anyone who's ever done it?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Maybe not. I thought you would have.
What?
Jamie thinks so little of you.
In our young friendship, you ever think that I would be the kind of person that would do a thing?
Not you. I'm saying I have to figure that you probably know someone at least who's done it.
No,
that's a garbage thing to do. And if you don't know what it is, look it up.
We just wanted to get drunk when we were in high school. We weren't really into like vandalism. Maybe some mild graffiti.
That's not vandalism.
No, we had one friend who used to throw bottles.
It's just a dick thing to do. That's all it is.
Yeah. Sure it is, man. Yeah, we had one friend in college. Georgie Hobbs. Sorry if you're listening. That very much doubt that you are.
Maybe.
She made it into the newspaper because she ended up trashing her parents' place to such level that it ended up costing them like literally hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I was not at said party because I was not cool enough, but I had been there. Yeah, don't do that, man. I'm sure that she probably received a...
Did she top tank?
She probably didn't top tank herself. She's like, well, this is so fucked up. Might as well just... Like,
well, we need to find out. So if you're listening,
yeah,
DM us.
I'll reach out to her.
You'll reach out
Funny
to her?
Question. Yeah.
God.
Can you imagine?
I think we lost all our listeners just now.
Yeah. Thanks, Jamie.
I'm going to fire some questions at you. If you could work at any bar in Vancouver outside of Botanist, which one would it be?
I'm going to go with Savio Volpe. Because I think they have the best bar program.
Really?
They have the best bar program?
Yeah.
Wow.
I believe really like strongly in people that own what they do and do what they own. And Savio does that best.
What do you like about it? I'm just curious.
They don't have a bar program.
I was going to say.
There's no bar. The bar they make antipasti on instead in the middle of the
Negronis.
Room. And yeah, bottle Negronis. And I'm like mad respect for anyone that's like, hey, can I get a vodka soda? And they're like, no. And they're
really?
Like, can I get a gin tonic?
Bar.
No. They're like, well, like, what do you have? You know, like Negronis? And they're like, can I get a gin tonic? No, you can have a Negroni. Drink your Negroni. I love that. I love
really?
That.
Huh.
Like to straight up like be bold enough to say no to a guest over every simple basic rye, ginger, Cosmo. Like, no, we don't do cocktails here. We do pre-bottled Negronis and I think Aperol Spritz.
Aperol Spritz, I think that's all they do.
I did not know that. And I had no idea.
You've been to Savio.
Rock and roll, man. Savio kills it.
You've never been to Savio?
Man.
What kind of friend are we?
Do yourself a favor.
I am a vegan. What do you want me to do? I'm not going to feel anything there. And now I know that I can get a Negroni.
They could probably hook you up.
Yeah, just a Negroni. Don't ask for anything.
They could hook you up. I just want to
have five Negronis.
Yeah, I'm going to take you there within like the next week or two.
I can have a salad for sure.
No, but I'm saying like you need to just go there. Just go to the room. The room is like
super cool.
Fucking stunning.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the best rooms in the city because it's so beautiful, but it's all not it's so vibrant and energetic. It's like bright. It's not like the customary room that you find in most cities. It's like it's got this, the way they designed it, it's like, in my opinion, it's like one of the best designed rooms I've ever seen, because I like a room that's very open. I think when you design a restaurant room, you want people, one thing that like a lot of restaurants lose, and not to shit on this one restaurant, but like Aiden, this restaurant in Saskatoon that I highly respect what they've done there. They've done so many great things for the Saskatoon market. Well, one of the things that irritates me about that room is they've closed it off and you lose connection. And one of the things that people love about most popular rooms, if you look at most popular
looking
rooms,
out that, around the room.
Well, people want to be seen.
People watching, man.
People want to be seen and people want to feel the energy of the room, you know? And so what they've done there is they did something really smart. They made all the booths really low so that you're not hiding people. You can be seen in every corner of the room. It's very bright lit, but it's also very warm and it's got a really good bustling energy. And it's like, outside, in my opinion, that room and the Kisatanta room are the two best rooms in the city.
Like both Craig Stangetto?
I think, I believe so.
Craig
definitely
did Savio.
He did Kisa.
Paul Grunberg as well.
Yeah.
He did Botanist.
Yeah, he did Botanist.
But his...
And Botanist has got that same feel too. Botanist is very open.
All those pothos plants. My God.
So
I got a mad boner when I go in there. I'm like, a plant boner. I'm like, holy shit, everything's so healthy. And like, look at... I remember someone saying there was about 256.
One
for every day
of the leap year.
Species of plants?
No, 356. It was one for every day of the leap year. Yeah, yeah.
I have a boner right now, you guys. I'm sorry.
Well, that was the number we were given when we first opened. Crotch. I don't know if it's...
And you got mad at me a couple episodes ago when I kept saying boner and you thought I was weird.
Well, really? You said it an excessive amount of times. And also, I'm surprised that you're surprised that I've never been stopped in a whole day.
Well, it's a great room. You're right. The design there is fantastic as well.
Yeah, I love that room.
Beautiful.
That's interesting. If you've just gotten off work right now,
yeah,
we're going to say this is going to be kind of a... I'm not going to say it like 2 in the morning. I'm saying you're getting off at like 7.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Where are you going and where are you drinking? Or what are you drinking, should I say?
Home.
On home?
No.
My own heart.
The thing is, the reality is...
I'm trying to appeal to Mickey here. Tish.
If I'm going home, I'm pouring a beer and I'm having 3 fingers of whiskey and I'm probably going to fall asleep before I finish either of those.
Whiskey of choice?
I've got 2 bottles of... I got given 2 bottles of Michter's right now. So I know I feel extremely fortunate. Thank you very much to the friends that gave me those. That's just such good juice.
Yeah.
Bit of a rum fiend as well. So I could definitely lean for rum. But the reality is that I never get off. Like, I usually start at like 5 or 6.
No, I mean,
so
like
if I did get off...
the hypothetical.
So. I think I'm gonna go see my boy Robin down at L'Abattoir.
Oh.
I like that. Yeah,
good spot there. I like that.
Sure is, man. Robin Cleaver makes some dynamite drinks, and he never gives me a menu. He just keeps putting drinks on, whether I like it or not.
Are you a cocktail guy when you go out, or are you more of a beer and wine guy?
Wine for sure, but I keep saying I don't like drinking cocktails, but I find myself drinking cocktails a lot because I just want to see what everyone else is doing.
Okay.
I think it's a good way of like keeping up with the trends. And I mean, Robin, for example, like, I don't think he was ever classically trained. So he doesn't have that idea of like using a 2-1-1 balance on like 2 parts strong, 1 part sweet, 1 part sour on cocktail builds. So like seeing people's interpretations of using flavor without classic structure is pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
You name me your 3 favorite spirits.
Rum, rum, and rum.
Really, you're a rum guy.
Big
really?
Time, yeah.
Big time.
Huge. Yeah, big Shama, big
you and
Sean
McGuigan. So, interesting. Yeah. Favorite rum?
What's the occasion? Oh, the one in my hand.
Oh, wow. I think mine's Smith & Cross.
Smith & Cross definitely up there. Smith & Cross is also famously often,
it's a punch in the face rum, but like, because it's so strong. But I just
54%,
love the...
Man.
Yeah, but the aromatics on that one are fucking...
I'm rum fire.
Rum fire.
100% of the time, every time.
Slut. I like that with Jamaican rum, man, like Smith & Cross as well. They use a... I looked this up the other day and I regretted looking it up. Smith & Cross, like the Ray and family, Ray and nephew family, Appleton, all of that, like they use a dunder pit, which is basically like all the mulch left over from the sugarcane after they've pressed it with like, I don't know, whatever fresh fruits. There's like mangoes that are rotting, like bananas thrown in this pit. And they just like let it like just break down, and that's the yeast that they use, their yeast strain, and they just like, when you're tasting, you're like, oh, it's so funky. You're like, yes, rotting bananas.
Rotting banana,
so good though. Yeah. So good. You're very right. Yeah.
I love that
Jamaican rum for life.
I used to be a little bit queasy about Jamaican rum, just mostly because Appleton's at first was not something I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But then as I've kind of gotten around trying other ones.
I mean, the VX for mixing is
fine.
Yeah,
the VX is really good, yeah. Yeah,
it's not like it's not a sipping rum, but
no,
for sure, some of the older statements.
I do like I'm more of a I do like Demerara rums too, so I'm more into like the Eldorados and stuff like that. So.
Eldorado, man,
yeah.
World's Only Wooden Still, that's delicious. That's great juice as well.
I do like the sweeter rums. I've come to realize, but then the Smith & Cross, I just can't help it. Every time I put it in the, I smell it. I'm just like, fuck, it smells so good. Outside of running the bar or outside of working a Botanist,
yeah.
What are some of the other things you like to do?
Oh, a number of things. I like to box. I do boxing and kickboxing a lot. I had a little fight recently.
Did you compete in a certain something recently?
I did, yeah. Yeah. We did the Cazadores Boss Bar.
Hmm.
Also related with Bacardi.
And you won, didn't you?
Thanks, Bacardi. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
You beat someone up, didn't you?
I beat somebody up and I didn't get in trouble for it.
I like it.
It was great. Yeah. I let him have the first round. It was fine. So, yeah, it was a fair fight, actually. Johnny Latham over at Open Outcry.
Have you been there?
I have.
Is it good?
Yeah, I had a fantastic time.
I've been meaning to go there so many times. I keep saying this. I've probably said this in like 4 episodes now. I haven't been able to go.
Yeah, you keep talking about Open Outcry.
I know, I gotta go. Well, because I hear so many good things about it and I want to go check it out and I bike by it every damn day.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's our neighborhood as well, right?
You bike by it every damn day?
Well, yeah, when I bike home every night, I
just like lock your bike up and walk in the door.
Well, because I'm going to work and then I come home from work every night and I'm like, I see it.
So just go in 20 minutes early. I know. Just have a cheeky. Fine, just check out the room's pretty cool.
Drinking before work is bad.
It is.
Yeah, that's
why
upon.
I called it a cheeky. Because it's just a little one.
Fair enough. So the cocktail is called Plate of the Bumblebee.
Yeah.
And the initiative is called Hive for Apius.
Hive of Apius.
Hive of Apius. Okay, cool. It's hiveofapius.com. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're saying that's going to be live probably within the next week or so by the time this
sure,
episode
sure.
airs?
Sure, by the time this airs, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. And you can find this cocktail at Botanist.
Botanist. You can find it on every continent on the planet.
You can find it at Diamond.
The Diamond, yeah, they said they'll have it up for December 1st.
Yeah. Laboratoire
as well. They're on from January 1st. A bunch of different spots. It's all on the website.
Okay,
actually,
perfect.
If you go on
awesome.
There, you'll be able to find all the places in the world you can find the drink.
All right. And so anybody out there who's interested in sustainability or you're curious about type of initiative and you want to learn more about bees and beekeeping and getting into this industry, or if you just want to support a great cause and have a great cocktail, we just drank it. I think it's fucking delicious. Got a nice grapefruit flavor in there. Definitely support that. Do check out Botanist. You can find Max there 5 days a week.
Sometimes six.
Very handsome gentleman. He's got a cute accent. You know what I'm saying? Cute.
I'm not editing that out, by the way.
Serious background for that drink, if you want to go.
But yeah, Max.
Just you too? Okay.
Max, thank you so much. This has been great. Very excited for this. We're very excited. When do you compete, by the way? You compete in January?
January 25th, I believe, we fly down for the next round.
So it's in Puerto Rico?
It'll be in Puerto Rico, yeah. We're hanging out in San Juan for the week and making drinks and responsibly making drunks.
Amazing. Whenever I think of San Juan, Puerto Rico, I just think of The Rum Diary by Hunter S. Thompson, so...
Yeah.
Hopefully you have an amazing great adventure book. Just the way he did.
So. Everyone send Max your positive energy.
Yeah, give me that.
Universe. Yeah. And I just want to say, well, we're wrapping up here. If you haven't done so yet, listener, do check out our website. Did you know we have a website?
You do?
We have a website. It's called midrangevancouver.com. We can check out a lot of Jamie's writing, a lot of Tristan's writing. I've done a little bit of writing. We have things like playlists up there. There's some photography stuff. All of our podcasts are actually up there with interesting photos of the guests. So you can, instead of listening to them Apple Music, you can actually go to the website and check them out.
What's Flux?
And I have a third podcast that I do that you may not know about. It's called Flux. It's a music show. It's actually in 1 hour of curated music every week, and it drops on Sundays, geared towards the more sort of eclectic, sort of like more abstract styles of music, like ambient and a lot of jazz and some... music for film, some reggae and rare groove, all the stuff that is sort of kind of the more sort of traditional forms of music. And we're going to be having a lot of different people throughout the community curating different shows every week. So you can check that out on midrange.com, midrangevancouver.com as well. As Track and Food and Beats and Repeat.
And I just wrote about Avatar.
You just wrote about Avatar, and we are in agreement.
Movie?
Fucking dumbest movie in the world.
Yeah. Well, don't give it away. If you want to know Jamie's thoughts on Avatar, go to midrange.com, midrangevancouver.com, and check it out.
Well, I'm just, think about it.
It should have been casted better.
Highest grossing,
that's the problem.
Highest grossing movie of all time up until literally the summer. Everyone watched it, went and saw it in 2009. No one fucking talks about it.
No.
It's the weirdest fucking movie.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get why it is what it is. It's irritating. Anyways, I wrote about it. Check it out. And
I really want to read that now.
So
I'm sure you have nothing good to say about it.
Yeah.
No, it's just weird. I don't get it. I don't get how a movie can make $2.7 billion.
What if Brad Pitt was cast as your favorite actor or Leonardo DiCaprio?
But I don't even think that has anything to do with it. It's a terrible movie. The only reason why people went and saw it is because it's 3D. That's it. It's the only reason why.
It's pretty. It's
Dance with the Wolves.
But there's a fantasy epicness to it that people really like. It resonated with people a lot.
Yeah, but... When you talk about resonating means like movies have like a longevity, a standing in the test of time. People rewatch Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
People rewatch Titanic. People rewatch all these great movies that were like impactful in their time. Mm-hmm. No one watches Avatar at all. No one talks about that movie at all. And yet it is the second highest grossing
right
movie
now.
Of all fucking time. How the fuck did that happen?
Okay.
We got duped.
All right.
That's what happened.
We got duped, bro.
People are dumb. Anyways.
Hard to disagree.
There you go. I got a little angry there.
James Cameron, man.
I know. It's James Cameron. It's the James Cameron effect. He's got four sequels in the works.
Yeah.
But Avatar?
Gross.
No one wants those.
Yeah. No. No. Just leave it where it is, man. Let it
exactly.
die.
Exactly. Oh, but whatever. Anyways. Thank you so much, Max. This was wonderful. Mickey.
Thanks, buddy.
Always great to see you. We're going to go to Savio soon. And we thank you, listeners. Do check us out. Find us, as always, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Luminary. Do check out our website, midrangevancouver.com. And we'll see you another day. Okay.